most busted in Laredo, but for reasons that I'd rather not disclose.
I smoke pot, and I like it a lot. Hi, this is Willie Nelson. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer to use than alcohol. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting responsible marijuana smokers in America. And to learn what you can do to help, please contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORMAL.
The show was long and we were just sitting there, and we'd come to play and not just for the ride.
And distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular audio podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, normalaudiostash.com. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. Welcome back to Normal's Daily Audio Stash today. It is Monday, August 27th. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us right now at Normal to help end senseless marijuana prohibition in America. We can do it together. Just visit norml.org to get involved today. We have an excellent week of Audio Stash programming coming up for you today. It's Philippe Lucas of the Victoria Island Compassion Society. That'll be our interview today. We also have a little bit of music for you today. Tomorrow and Wednesday, we're going to speak with some folks up in the Live Free or Die state of New Hampshire who are asking all of the presidential candidates on both sides their views on medical marijuana and stopping the raids taking place in California. We're going to have audio from those candidates and interviews with Stuart Cooper of Granite Staters for Medical Marijuana and Matt Simon of SendTheRightMessage.com. That'll be Tuesday and Wednesday. Friday of this week, man, have we got a great show for you. We had a sit-down interview with the Cottonmouth Kings here in Philadelphia right before they went on stage at the Electric Factory with Tech N9ne here for a great show. So we got an interview with Daddy X of the Cottonmouth Kings, also got some signed Cottonmouth Kings memorabilia to give away, and they've got a new album. It is due out tomorrow, folks. Cloud Nine, the new Cottonmouth Kings album, comes out tomorrow. You can link up for pre-orders and all kinds of stuff at SuburbanNoiseRecords.com. We're also going to travel up to Boston, Massachusetts, and speak with the Mascan Normal guys, specifically Bill Downing and Michael Crawford, about the Boston Freedom Fest coming up September 15th. That's a Saturday from 12 noon until 8 p.m., featuring a bunch of bands and speakers, including Normal's Keith Strupp. They'll all be up there on the Boston Common up there, folks, on September 15th. We're going to have a great preview of the music and the events up there again with Bill and Michael here this week on Normal's Daily Audio Stash. It's all right here this week, folks. Great music, great information, great interviews. All here for you every single day on Normal's Daily Audio Stash podcast. Make sure you don't miss an episode. If you have, just visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. You can catch up there. First up today, we've got an exclusive commentary, a director's notes commentary from Normal's executive director, Alan St. Pierre.
The three stages of truth: mocked, fought, and universally self-evident. Lest there be any doubt that the re-legalization movement has progressed to stage two, anti-pot prohibitionists are digging in hard on many fronts. the federal intervention against state-sanctioned medical marijuana dispensaries, mainly in California, in the month of July, has proven how recalcitrant and disconnected the federal government is from the American people concerning cannabis, common sense, and compassion. A potpourri of government pugnacity in the war against cannabis consumers are chronicled here. Witness a damning and well-researched indictment of the Drug Czar's office's long-standing policy of, as even pro-drug warrior Senator Grassley of Iowa states, cooking the books when it comes to publishing manipulated data regarding drug use. The Cato Institute in Washington, D.C. hosted a debate between Professors Matthew Robinson and Renee Sherlin of Appalachian State University and the Drug Czar's top policy analyst, Dr. David Murray. Robinson and Sherlin are authors of Lies, Damn Lies, and Drug War Statistics, a critical analysis of claims made by the Office of National Drug Control Policy. And, as they presented their findings of facts to the audience, Dr. Murray's face turned increasingly cherry red with anger and indignation. In rebuttal, Dr. Murray's engaged in petty reprisals, including attacking the authors as silly for citing Emperor Wears No Clothes author and hemp historian Jack Herrera. Want to see your government at work? Check out the video and audience Q&A, including from yours truly, at cato.org. Type David Murray, M-U-R-R-A-Y, into the Cato search engine. When Students for Sensible Drug Policy, SSDP, received a reply from the Office of National Drug Control Policy regarding a Freedom of Information Act request, the letter indicated that SSDP could expect a reply by 2207. When the organization blogged in jest about, quote, federal bureaucracies moving really slow, unquote, ONDCP Assistant General Counsel Daniel Peterson shot back at SSDP, quote, if you're going to play games like this, you can expect the same kind of games played on you, unquote. Is harassing student organizations a good use of taxpayers' dollars? Again, your government at work. Speaking of pro-drug war government employees at work harassing citizens who favor alternatives to prohibition, some of them apparently have the green light to, quote, educate, unquote, a.k.a. harass. When a conservative think tank policy analyst named Jessica Peck Corey from the Independence Institute penned a July op-ed in the Denver Post in favor of medical access to marijuana, much to the young mother's surprise, she received a rambling, misspelled, word-laden, and unprofessional email, oddly, from the U.S. Justice Department, that turns out to have been sent by a local DEA agent from the Rocky Mountain Division named Thomas D. Miller. In the message, DEA's Miller blasted Corey for, quote, liberal spin, unquote, and misleading the public with her, quote, liberal friends, unquote. Jeff Sweeten, Miller's boss at the DEA, when confronted by Colorado media about Miller's inarticulate harangue, glibly indicated that DEA agents have a right to an opinion and free speech. The DEA does not believe marijuana is a medicine, and that the agency, quote, will go after cannabis clubs wherever they exist, unquote. Yep, indeed, we are deep into the second stage of the three stages of truth. Help fight the good fight. Join and support Normal's nationwide pro-marijuana advocacy efforts today. This is Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of Normal, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C.
Alan there in one of our exclusive Director's Notes commentaries, right from Normal's Executive Director here on Normal's Daily Audio Stash. Stay tuned. Coming up next is our interview with Philippe Lucas of the Vancouver Island Compassion Society in Canada.
You're listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash.
Next it's time to check in with Philippe Lucas in Canada. Philippe is the founder and director of the Vancouver Island Compassion Society, a Canadian nonprofit therapeutic cannabis research and distribution center, and founder of Canadians for Safe Access, the nation's largest medicinal cannabis patients' rights organization. Former secondary school teacher, he also serves as director of communications for DrugSense, a U.S.-based drug policy think tank, and is one of about 1,000 Canadians who are currently allowed to legally use therapeutic cannabis. He's involved with a very interesting court case as an expert witness in Canada right now, and it's part of a constitutional challenge there. He also recently returned from a trip to the Middle East exploring medical cannabis there. Phil, it's great to welcome you back here to the Audio Stash today.
Well, thank you very much, Chris. I'm happy to be here.
It's wonderful to speak with you today, Philippe. Let's begin with this truly fascinating trial happening in Canada. You're involved with it as an expert witness. Tell us a bit about the case there.
Sure. The case is a constitutional challenge of our federal medical marijuana program that's taking place at the BC Supreme Court level here in Canada. In Canada, unlike the U.S., we actually have a federal medical marijuana program. It was implemented in 1999 as a result of court challenges by patients, but it's really been ineffective and hasn't served the needs of Canada's critically and chronically ill since day one. And so we all, as a result of that, we've had a parallel system of community-based dispensaries that have been providing medical cannabis to end patients, much of it on a nonprofit basis since the since actually before the inception of this program, and so our challenge right now is trying to open up access to legal protections for Canada's critically and chronically ill, as well as legalize the work of community-based dispensaries like the Vancouver Island Compassion Society.
I know this is, as you mentioned, a very complex case. So who's appeared so far?
Well, so far it's basically all been our side that's been presenting the case. We've had sessions in May, and then we've just finished up some more court sessions in July. We've had great support at all levels so far. In fact, just 2 weeks ago we had Senator Pierre Claude Nolan, the former chair of the Senate Special Committee on Illegal Drugs, fly in and testify on behalf of the Vancouver Island Compassion Society. He and his Senate Special Committee on Illegal Drugs recommended in a 2002 report that Health Canada legalize compassion societies and immediately begin a cooperative relationship to produce research through community-based dispensaries. And so it was great to have his support. We've also had a researcher from the Canadian AIDS Society come in and tell us about the challenges facing people living with HIV/AIDS who want to seek legal protection for the use of medical cannabis. And Dr. Bob Melamed from the University of Colorado, Colorado Springs, also flew in to testify and to tell us about the need for multiple strains, which isn't something that's available through the federal government. They only make a single strain available right now. And also the potential dangers of gamma radiation, which is a decontamination technique used by our federal government on the supply right now.
Yeah, there have been a number of complaints about this cannabis program administered by Health Canada. Many of these complaints are just simply about the quality of the government-supplied marijuana, it being of such poor quality for patients.
That's absolutely true. Out of Canada's 1,800 legal users right now, it's only about 20% that are currently using the federal supply. And through a recent Access to Information Act request, I found out that there's currently 220 Canadians who are in debt, in significant debt to Health Canada for ordering that cannabis supply, and they currently owe Health Canada about $300,000. Now, our federal government has responded by sending collection agencies after these cancer patients, Hep C patients, and people living with HIV/AIDS, which I don't think should be the basis of a compassionate program. And so we've heard from a lot of those end users and people who have experience with the federal cannabis supply throughout this court case, and they've let us know what they think about the current program. And additionally, we also heard last week from our deputy police chief here in the city of Victoria, He told the courts that the Vancouver Island Compassion Society has never received a police complaint or a complaint has never made the police about our work or our actions, and that he doesn't consider us a priority or a concern for his police force.
And what you just mentioned there, Philippe, it's just such the opposite of what's been happening here in California. Dispensaries are being raided and shut down on claims by police that there have been complaints about these locations. Many of these complaints have never been substantiated. And you're saying the VIX is just, you know, it's such a regular business. There are no complaints about the operation or the patients who make their way in and out like any other store. So the VIX just is as part of the community as any other business with regular customers coming and going. And
that's exactly right. It's a storefront operation. We're currently helping 680 people in the local community gain access to a safe supply of medical marijuana with a real focus on organic cannabis. We also offer multiple methods of ingestion, everything from baked goods to tinctures to oils to really cutting-edge products like we have an oral mucosal spray that's just fantastic. And we've been a registered nonprofit society since the day we started, and so it's not a privately owned company. It's owned by the patients who are actually served by the organization. And it's been working great so far, and last year we distributed about $500,000 worth of cannabis to the critically and chronically ill folks in this region. And the local medical community has really bought into this model as well, and in fact we have recommendations from the local medical community from over 270 local doctors.
Wow. Well, Phil, you mentioned the organic growing and also the gamma irradiation there with government-grown cannabis. You know, why is it so important to have medical cannabis that is both organic and also radiation-free?
Well, with organics, it's there's a couple of reasons. The first one is that we want to ensure the safety of the product to the end user, and so not using any potentially harmful pesticides, herbicides, or chemical fertilizers on the product is one of the mandates of the Vancouver Island Compassion Society. Additionally, there's a lot of research that suggests that organic production actually increases the production of terpenoids and flavonoids, which are additional chemicals in cannabis that affect not only bioavailability but have therapeutic potential in and of themselves. And so we feel that an organic supply is a must if we're doing this for medical reasons. And unfortunately, our federal government hasn't seen it that way. And so their current cannabis supply has such high levels of biological impurities that they need to use gamma radiation, literally low-level radiation, in order to destroy those high levels of molds and mildews that are found on the federal cannabis. And so with all of that, of course, that completely disqualifies the federal supply from being considered organic. And as we can see from the response from end users, it generally hasn't met the needs of Canada's sick and suffering citizens.
And, I know this is going to be conjecture here, Phil, but are those quality concerns and news about the low-quality government-supplied marijuana that is perhaps, you know, all that has perhaps kept more people from joining the official medical program there?
Well, I think that, interestingly enough, Compassion Clubs are doing a lot more than Health Canada to get people into the Health Canada program. Despite the fact that I'm not happy with the federal program, I do think that it's beneficial to gain, if you're able to do so, to gain access to the legal protection that it offers. And so I've actually given seminars on how to fill out the complicated and onerous paperwork involved in getting into this program. But overall, Health Canada's own estimates suggest that there's between 400,000 and a million Canadians currently claiming to use marijuana for medical purposes. And in the 7 years that this program's been in existence, only 1,800 people have been able to sign up for it. And so we can see that it's just barely scratching the surface of the need of Canadians who want to seek relief through the use of therapeutic cannabis. By comparison, Compassion Societies, and there aren't many in Canada compared to, say, California, there's only about 10 well-established clubs in Canada, currently serve about 10,000 Canadians, and we're doing so all at no cost to the taxpayer.
Now, Phil, back to this specific constitutional challenge trial. You were qualified as an expert witness here, but that wasn't an easy process, as I understand.
Well, it was actually a long process. We had to have a trial within a trial that's known as a voir dire on my expertise, and the whole process took 7 days of court time. I was on the stand for 7 days as the prosecutor, who's been very obstructive about us getting our evidence in, continue to grill me and my level of involvement with the Compassion Society as well as on my expertise. Eventually he had to concede that I had expertise in the matter. His argument was largely centered, and the Crown's argument was largely centered on the fact that I clearly have a bias in the outcome of this court case. And so eventually the judge gave a written ruling in which he supported my right and our right to put me forward as an expert in this case. And what that does is it opens up opinion evidence that I can give. In other words, as an expert, I can give opinion on what I think about this program that goes beyond just hearsay evidence or just the level of weight that you would give to someone right off the street. So it was a great success to have me to be able to give this expert testimony, and I think it's really opened up a lot of potential for the success of this current court challenge.
And have doctors or other caregivers also called for a better quality medical cannabis supply?
They have at different times. The Canadian Medical Association and the Canadian Medical Protection Agency have been highly critical of the federal medical cannabis program throughout its existence. And although the CMAs, the Canadian Medical Association's current policy is supportive of the program, they haven't gone out of their way to educate doctors or tell doctors about their rights and responsibilities in regards to medical cannabis access. And so what we're seeing is that there's a mixed message being sent to physicians, and physicians are still constantly telling people who are legitimately qualified to use medical cannabis that they either simply don't know enough about this product or that they're being advised not to sign the forms by their governing agencies. And so we see that there's this cloud of misinformation and reluctance to have physicians, which are gatekeepers of our program, participate in the program. And so right now it's what it's resulted in is that very few people who qualify for the Health Canada program have been able to access it.
Now, Philippe, what is next for this complex trial here? Let me ask you, you know, what you think the best possible outcome of the trial could be.
Well, what's next for the trial is some October court dates, at which point the Crown will present their case. The only two witnesses the Crown are calling are two former administrators of the program, which should be a really exciting couple of weeks in court. And we look forward to be able to question them on how this program has been run throughout its existence. And as far as the potential outcome, there's really just a few things that we're asking the judge to acknowledge and rule on. And the first one is that I think that in Canada we actually have a well-established constitutional right to access medical cannabis. Unfortunately, under our current program, that right only starts once Health Canada has processed an application, which can take 6 to 12 weeks right now for Health Canada to actually go through the paperwork. And that process has to be done every year and renewed every year. And so, for example, myself as a medical user can be completely legal to grow, produce, and use cannabis one day, and the next day, because that my card might actually expire, I can be completely illegal despite there being no change in my physical condition. And so what we'd like the judge to recognize is that my constitutional right to use cannabis, that all Canadians' constitutional rights to use cannabis should begin with a simple doctor's recommendation. Now, I completely agree that Health Canada has an interest in maintaining a registry of current users, but I just don't think that this onerous bureaucratic process should be the be-all, end-all in terms of protecting our constitutional right to use cannabis. And since it's rather arbitrary as to whether a bureaucrat is filling out my application this weekend or doesn't have time to fill it out till next week, I hate to see that kind of arbitrary application to our constitutional rights here in Canada. And the other thing that we're asking the judge to recognize is actually a ruling that came down from the Ontario Court of Appeal in 2003 in a case called Hitzig. During that case, the Ontario Court of Appeal struck down the current limits on the amount of people who can produce in one place and the amount of people who can produce for a medical user. right now in Canada, we have a one-to-one basis. So if you were a legal user, Chris, I could grow for you, but I couldn't grow for anyone else. And three of us could grow in one location, but no more than that. And so it really puts up blockers to patients who want to start cooperatives or to take part in the services offered through compassion societies. So what we're asking the judge to do is to uphold once again that earlier Hitzig decision from 2003 and to recognize that critically and chronically ill Canadians' rights to access medical cannabis begin with a doctor's recommendation and not with the bureaucrat's processing of a form at Health Canada.
And Philippe, let's switch gears here for a moment from this trial to a really amazing journey you recently took to Israel. Tell us about the trip a bit and what brought you there.
Well, it was just a fascinating opportunity. Unbeknownst to much of the world, Israel's got a small-scale medical marijuana program underway right now. They signed up over the last few years 120 users to that program, and they actually have 60 active users in the program. And what they've had is a young activist and medical cannabis advocate and producer who's been giving away cannabis to patients so far. And right now they're moving on to the next step where they want to go towards a licensed production facility and a more formalized form of access. And so myself and Rick Doblin participated in a consultation with both the federal medical cannabis producer and distributor right now, whose name is Sahi Cohen, and the physician in charge of the program, whose name is Yehuda Baruch. And that consultation went really well. What we were, my only goal in going down to Israel was to encourage the Israeli government to move towards having the best medical marijuana program in the world. We've seen federal governments drop the ball on this issue over and over again, whether it's in the U.S., in Canada, or in Holland. And I think that Israel, with a blank slate, really had the potential to do something special and different from everyone else. And we are extremely encouraged by how these meetings went. And so far, there seems to be uptake on some basic philosophical concepts of medical cannabis access, including the nonprofit production and distribution of medical cannabis, multiple strains of cannabis being available to end users, and an organic supply being the basis of that supply as well. And so those three really key points that have been the foundation of organizations like the Vancouver Island Compassion Society were very well received by the Israeli government. And it looks like that's what they're going to be moving towards in the next few years.
So you and Rick were meeting with those who are actually part of the government there.
Yeah, absolutely. It's quite amazing. Israel's really a country the size of New Jersey, and so we were really impressed by the high level of access that we were granted in addressing some of these issues. And I can only come away really hopeful that despite the nascency of this program, that within the next 18, 24 months, they're going to leapfrog ahead of Holland and Canada and have the best medical marijuana program in the world.
You know, is that surprising? Because given Israel's relationship with the United States, usually the U.S. tries to push its own drug policy and its own opposition to medical marijuana on its allies and neighbors. But in this case, it seems like there hasn't been a peep out of the United States regarding Israel's medical marijuana program.
No, and I think part of it is it's because it's so small scale at this point. I think it's we should be clear to reiterate that Israel has an actually a very strong anti-drug stance at the federal level and otherwise, and on the international stage. But they've been able to take away some of the ideology that's plagued our own federal programs and look at this as a pure compassionate access, a matter of pure compassionate medical access. And therefore move forward with pragmatic, effective solutions, which is something that for some reason has eluded Canada and the U.S. so far.
And is there also a cultural acceptance to cannabis in Israel? I've heard that the Hasidic community enjoys cannabis, and we also know it's been used there for thousands of years back, literally biblical times.
Well, I think that the proximity to cultures that have a longer history of use with the use with medical cannabis, certainly and recreational cannabis use as well, certainly plays into that to a large extent. And I also think that Israel's a nation that's, that, as the whole region is, that has really suffered greatly through through ongoing wars in the region, and I think that they're more pragmatic in their approach to the suffering of their people, and ultimately it's worth mentioning that in Canada we have about 90% support of medical marijuana, and even in the U.S. the public response to medical marijuana is about 80% in support. I think that what we're seeing there, and certainly what we're seeing in Israel, is that everyone, I think the reason we get such strong support is everyone knows someone who suffered unnecessarily. And basically what I like to ask opponents of medical cannabis is what wouldn't you do to help someone, particularly someone you love, alleviate their suffering in their time of need? And I think that the Israeli government has looked at those questions very carefully and has decided to take a more effective approach than we have. And but hopefully this constitutional challenge taking place in Canada is going to move us a few steps closer to towards a successful medical cannabis program as well.
And Philippe, let me also ask about this general feel of the trip for you. I know you got a chance to travel around in the country a bit. Was it your first time there, and what were your impressions of the region?
It was my first time in Israel, and I have to say it was really the highlight of my summer, without a doubt. I had a chance to see a great deal of the country because of its small size, and it's clearly a country wrapped up in geopolitical tensions. There's no doubt. There's a lot of military and police presence in the country. That's a bit disconcerting to North Americans who aren't exposed to that as much. But that being said, I found the Israelis to be friendly, welcoming. The people that I was certainly dealing with were overwhelmingly supporters of peace with the Palestinians and with the rest of the region. And it's a country filled with all of our histories, and a really fascinating place to visit and travel. I highly recommend it. It was really thrilling to be down there, and I really hope that with the evolution of this medical marijuana program, I'll have a chance to go back and visit over the next few years once again.
Well, Philippe, it's just an amazing, amazing conversation every time we speak. I so appreciate you taking time to join us here on Normal's Daily Audio Stash, and I look forward to speaking with you again very soon.
Chris, I look forward to keeping your listeners up to date, both about the Canadian Constitutional Challenge and about the burgeoning Israeli medical marijuana program. And, of course, if anyone wants more information about our challenge, they can go on our website at www.thevix.com. And this challenge, which is Canada's most extensive challenge of our federal medical marijuana laws, is also our most expensive. And so if there's anyone that can help us out in any way financially, we'd really appreciate it. And I want to send a shout-out to MPP, DPA, Robert Field, as well as the number of individual donors who've really helped out in this constitutional challenge. Certainly they can contact me at Phil, P-H-I-L, at drugsense.org if they're willing and able to help.
Philippe Lucas is the founder of the Vancouver Island Compassion Society. They can be found online at thevix.com. We have links to them at normalaudiostash.com. Listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 4:20 tomorrow. Podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.